Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
What's happening, everybody? Welcome to IGN Unfiltered. I'm Ryan McCaffrey, your host. This is my monthly-ish, occasional interview series where we take a deep dive with some of the best, brightest, and most interesting minds in the video game industry. Today, my guest is none other than Justin Roiland, he of Squanch Games. You started yourself a video game studio, and this December, Justin, you and your team are putting out a video game called High on Life, which we've been showing the heck out of on IGN, and everybody's digging it.
Yeah, it's crazy to see the reaction. It's exciting for the team because, you know, we did Trover in VR, and it was just crickets, you know. But I don't know why or what. There's probably a bunch of reasons. But and then this one, you know, has been night and day, just insane. So we're really, really hopeful for it. And we definitely, it's a labor of love. I mean, everybody on the team is just... It's exciting when you've got a big group of people that all are super pumped and believe in what we're making and just want to, like, yeah. It's different than when people are just like, clocking in and like, all right, I got to do my, you know. This is like everybody is just so excited about this game.
Well, we're gonna talk a lot about High on Life. With this show, I love to just kind of take a walk through your career a little bit because... You know, in doing a little research, because I'm a huge fan of Rick and Morty, everything, Solar Opposites, so I'm thrilled to meet you here and have you here at IGN, so I appreciate it. And looking it up, you and I are the same age, born the same year, so I always love to ask all my guests, and now especially you, because I'm curious how you'll match up with me, is, like, what are your...
How do you plan to die? No.
Oh, wait, is that one of the questions we're doing?
I mean, you pick your vices, right? Like,
But, like, what are some of your earliest video game memories? Like, is it Nintendo for you, or did you even have, like, an Atari in the house?
No, Nintendo, for sure. Yeah, mine was... I don't know. I feel like I was pretty keyed in as a kid. You know, I kind of knew what was going on. I knew the toys that I want. You know, I was constantly glued to the TV watching the commercials. I somehow missed the Nintendo ad campaign. And so I'm down the street. I grew up out in like Almond, you know, farm.
Yeah, out in like Central California.
Yeah, there. So I had to walk like a mile down the street to hang out with, you know, the nearest friend that was out there, you know, going to school with me. And I'm hanging out with him, this kid Buck, and his name was Buck. Can you imagine that? Anyway, and he had a Nintendo. And he had Super Mario Brothers. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding? I had such a filthy mouth as a kid. His mom didn't like me because she thought I was trouble because of my swearing all the time. But I was just like, are you fucking kidding me? What in the fuck is this shit? And I'm just playing. I'm like, when the fuck and how? And how do you have, like... And so then from that point on, it was just me begging my mom and dad, please, please, for fuck's sake. Like, you know, and I wasn't saying that to... Well, actually, I did swear. My parents did not care. They were so... letting me watch horror movies when I was in first grade, like just the worst shit ever. I turned out okay, I guess. But anyway, and then I finally got it, and it was like Mario Brothers, you know, like the old Rampage, Wall Street Kid, which I could never figure out. I was like, what in the fuck do I do? Like my dad was beating it. I'm like, what things are you picking up on? I don't understand. And then of course Zelda and Metroid was like the Metroid just like that game really was like, you know, I would just leave it on and have the music playing in the back. Like I just, it was on constantly because, you know, back then you turn it
no
off
save,
and it started. I wasn't going to sit there and type in a fucking
the
nonsense
password save.
I tried it a few times and I was like, this is not.
Were you able to eventually, you know, win your parents over to get you the Nintendo? Because for me, it was first communion money. It's like, I'm saving I'm buying the Nintendo, which was like, I think either $100 or $120 back then.
No, my friend Jackie would be like, you got it the next day. But the truth is, no, I had to, we were like middle class, you know, my dad was smart and he bought like a nice plot of land with almond trees. And so there was like, you know, aside from my parents both working, like they had that money coming in and to offset, you know, the mortgage on the house, blah, blah, blah. It was like middle class, yeah. You know? So it wasn't like just money getting thrown around like crazy. So that was a big one. So, you know, I had to beg and plead for a while before I got my own. But I think I stopped asking for plastic action figures and it was just purely like just this, like, you know, I don't even know how, I wish I could remember specifically, like, but I bet I was probably like mapping out like, okay, let's just say one action figure is this much money. Right. And we get the action figure, you know, I will take a sabbatical from action figures for this, you know, I don't know.
Cutting deals with their parents.
But it took a while and I had to mow the lawn and I had to, I don't know what shit I had to do, like go spray weeds and go, you know, and we'll log your hours. I had to do that shit, you know, go rake the almonds before the harvest, all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's how I got my Sega Genesis, was I had to work that summer, 8-hour days. And my dad was like $2 an hour, some like really fucked up, you know what I mean? Like,
but it seemed good to you.
Well, I didn't know that any better. So me and my friends when I was growing up, we would go out with rakes and we would, any stray almonds, we would just, not leaves, almonds. We would rake the almonds into that, like, into that pile down the middle of the almond lanes so that when they would go pick them up, there all these missed almonds would get harvested. But, and that's how I got my Genesis. Cause that was the next one that I was like, holy fucking shit. I was like, went from
Sega does what Nintendo don't.
I was caught up. The truth was there was a place in my town, that had, like you would go in and you would pay $5 an hour and you would sit down and you could just put headphones on and you could grab any games they had and just play.
I had a place like that too.
Yeah.
Called Gamers. And yeah, you could just rent time by the hour on any of the systems.
And just like go. And I remember the Superman game, Sonic, or sorry, not Superman, Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That old school early Genesis Spider-Man with the music is still just in my brain. But that and Sonic and just Sega seemed to, for me, I don't know what it was back then. It was like the music and the, and I can't remember truly if
the sports games were, the EA sports games were better on Genesis.
I wasn't
than
a
they
sports
were.
Games no. person. Yeah, I was more like, I like the weird platformer action adventure, you know, like weird, like Decap Attack, as awful as it is, or Toki, or you know, anything that the art. I was more like, or like World of Illusion or Castle of Illusion. Like I love the art style. I love like platformy stuff and like really cool like art direction was like just grabbed me and then I would get just stabbed in the gut, you know. It's like, oh, what a piece of shit this game, you know, this game fucking sucks but it looks cool. I got tricked so many times, but I can't remember, did Genesis came out first, right, before Super Nintendo, or am I wrong about that? I'm trying to remember if they had both,
you know,
there.
Now I'm blanking on it too, now that you're putting me on the spot. Because I had a Genesis before I had a Super Nintendo. But I don't know if you were like me. One console at a time.
I
never had more than
one
in the house.
I eventually saved up money and got the Super Nintendo. Yeah. And it was like, holy shit, was there all kinds of good stuff to discover. But for some reason, for a while, it was just Genesis. And I don't know. There were certain games that reinforced my choice. Because like, I don't know if you remember the old Beavis and Butthead games,
but oh, just,
like if you go back and you play the Genesis versus the Super Nintendo, the Genesis version is thoughtful. It's like an adventure. You're picking up inventory. It's more of like an adventure style, like, you know, top down. You're moving around a world. It's fucking great. And then it's great for that time. Then you go and play the Super Nintendo version, and you're just like, fuck this shit. This is just a shitty, bad, like side scroller that's just not, it's just like a frustrating, angry video game.
Well, it was like when Mortal Kombat you had the sweat on the Super Nintendo version versus the blood.
That's another example. You know, when you're a little kid or whatever, however old I was, you're just like, you get caught up in that, like, fuck Nintendo. But then after I got a little older, I was like, no, this is like, oh my God, look at, it was just a great, you know, I got it for cheaper and I got this massive library of an amazing like Earthbound and obviously Mario, you know, Super Mario World, and I mean just all the stuff that I had missed, and it was just like, holy, I was like fed with
Pilot
content.
Wings, all that stuff.
Oh my
stuff.
God, all of it. Yeah, I mean just
And by the way, we were remembering correctly, Genesis did hit first.
Okay.
So we were on the
That's
money.
That's right.
With that.
So I think when I was going to that place, there wasn't a Super Nintendo for me to like hook up and try out you know what I mean? And if there had been, I would have been just as like taken, I would have been like, oh God, I want them both, you know, but it just so happened that Genesis was all they had, and So I just, you know, I was playing all those and I was like, I don't want to be in this shitty building for $5 an hour. I want to be in my house playing this. But yeah.
Well, let me fast forward a little bit. So, you know, I'm kind of curious with you growing up and kind of high school, college, and ultimately into your career, because to me, being a fan of your work, improvisation, ad-libbing seem to be like hallmarks of everything you do, including High on Life, which we're showing off.
Like, I would say Trover was like 70-30, with 70% being, you know, ad-libbed.
Wait, 70 ad-libbed?
Yeah, 70 Trover. Ad-libbed. Yeah, I might be a little off there. Like, Spencer was my writing partner, or like head writer on that game. Sorry, I just touched the mic. But Spencer was my head writer on that game. And it was like, you know, there were just a lot of circumstances that caused that game to be a lot ad-libbed. And I think it was because I temped a bunch of stuff, thinking we would replace it later, and then we get far enough into production and it's like, it's you know what, we don't have time to, not only is it like everyone likes it, it's fine, but like we have fires everywhere, so we focused on where we needed to focus. But with this game, it was a flip. It was like 70 scripted, 30% ad-lib. And it, you know, my writer Alec Robbins, fucking brilliant, amazing writer, and you know, just an incredible addition to the Squanch team. And it was just like, couldn't have been a better process. It was like, you know, really solid pages with really great jumping off points. And certain actors did way more ad-libbing than others. So like JB, I'm sure we're going to get into.
People have already seen that by the time this interview airs.
JB did a lot of ad-libbing and it was encouraged. I mean, that's like...
Sure, I mean, that's his bread and butter, right?
You know, like Curb is essentially an outline show, and they know when they go to shoot a scene, they know like the beginning, middle, and end. They know every character's sort of point of view and perspective, and then they just run scenes. And, you know, JB is like one of the best, you know, out there. And yeah, I was like, dude, like, if you know the, once he kind of understood, you know, the scene and what was going on, he could just go. And it was, and we're, you know, that it's like us going the extra mile to make sure that's what gets in the game and not just the scripted, you know, like what's on the page. So
I'm curious then, given that improv is a through line through your stuff and that we are the same age, I'm wondering if you, like me, watched a lot of Mystery Science Theater 3000 growing up, and or Whose Line Is It Anyway, the old British version.
I kind of missed the boat on Whose Line. I'd seen a little bit here and there. I was glued to MST3K.
Yeah, me too.
I want to say a sophomore in high school, that summer, or maybe it was the summer after freshman, in between freshman and sophomore, we got a satellite dish. Keep in mind, up to that point, I just had like five channels growing up, right? Except for the 1 year I lived in Florida, I had cable, but that was a nightmare year. Awful, but I had cable. Finally got a satellite dish with everything. And...
including Comedy Central. Then.
Yes. And so I went completely nocturnal that summer. So I would sleep till like 6 p.m. I'd get up and I would have either the night before like highlighted all the satellites I was going to turn to at what time and what channels I was going to be on. And I literally would highlight out my... all for the entire night until like 6 or 7 a.m. And then I would go to sleep.
Because MST3K aired at midnight back in those days.
Yeah. And it was such a... when I get really sick with something, which thank God, knock on wood, hasn't happened in a while, like, I don't know what it is, but MST3K is like the most peaceful.
I know what you mean.
It just makes me feel so good to watch it. Just put it on. I had swine flu in 2010. Can you imagine? I got fucking swine flu. I was so sick I couldn't play video games. I remember I was just like, I can't even fucking do this. And so, yeah, it was just MST3K got me through it. And it was like, oh my God, it was the best medicine. I mean, it was just incredible. And to this day, like if I'm really sick, like that's what I go to. Like again, haven't been in a while, luckily. But and then there was a bunch of weird Comedy Central stuff. And then there was like, God, I would jump over to, I don't even know, man. I just had the whole night mapped out. There were kids in the hall, like constantly.
I was literally going to ask that next.
Yeah. Early. And by the way, speaking of, you know, we have Kevin McDonald in the game.
Really?
Oh, I didn't know
that.
Like, you know, even with Rick and Morty, like it was always fun in the early days to like, like, could we get, like,
invite, you know, your
these,
heroes?
Like, yeah, these awesome people, like, you know, Dana Carvey we got on Rick and Morty, and like just people that you just grew up, you know, really loving, and you know, and just being able to get folks like that. And then, you know, yeah, same with the game. It's like, who can we get, you know, like that would be really fun. And then of course all my cool friends and cool, like all my funny friends, you know, like, and you know, who wants to just play in the sandbox. Like a big one is Joel Haver. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
I'm not, no.
So everyone would know him as the little kid that you deal with, you know, I'm so shootable. Like,
oh,
shooting,
okay.
You know,
yeah.
That little, yeah. What is his name? I forget his name. He's got a name, but, and he says it a lot. But anyway, so yeah, he's doing a lot of voices in the game, and he kind of became like me, him, and Alec, my head writer, do a lot of, Alec does Pseudo, and like he does just a bunch of like weird interdimensional cable commercials, and same with Joel. But Joel Haver also is pretty well known because his YouTube channel blew up for. He does these really cool rotoscoped, like, animated, and their video game, like, he has one with, like, I'm sure you're familiar with it. It's like this, like, RPG style, like, you know, sort of Bethesda style game, and it's like a guy in chainmail, and he's like, huzzah!
Yeah.
And he's gonna fight, you know, goes on a mission, and he kills a rat, and I don't know. Anyway, it's Joel Haver on YouTube. He's really funny, and the crazy thing about that was, like, I saw his video and he was starting to blow up, and I was like, I go to like find him on Instagram and reach out to him, and I discover that he had messaged me like months before he blew up, like, you know, with a link to his stuff. And I'm like, because I don't know, I don't understand how, I mean, I'm sure if I took the time, the DMs and all of it, I just don't know what the fuck Instagram, like, how do you sort them by most recent? How do you, like, I won't see anything, and all of a sudden I'll go and check, and I'll be like, where the fuck are all these? Now I've got a bunch of, like, verified people, but how do I get to them?
Right.
Because now they're there, and, like, I don't have them normally. I just gave up. I was like, I don't understand this. So, anyway, he messaged me. I never saw it, and it was just, you know, we hit it off, and he came in, and we had him in the writer's room for the game, and, like, just he's brought a lot to it, but... He's literally the ant guy. Like, in the beginning of the game, he's, like, very there. Like, he's doing Little Kid. He's doing Slumsley. That's the name. And then he's doing the ant guys with Fred Stoller. And just, it's madness.
So, like, comedy clearly has been a big part of your life growing up. Like, did you always want to be either an actor or showrunner? Or, like, what was like, young Justin Roiland's career aspiration?
I always wanted to... build worlds, animation, you know, like I never wanted to be on camera. I never had any acting aspirations. It was always like, I want to create worlds. I didn't even think I had aspirations to do voices. I think it was more just like, I want to create, like, you know, I remember when I was a kid being a big fan of Ren and Stimpy, a big fan of Beavis and Butthead, you know, there's more, like, obviously Simpsons, you know, but, you know, just that was like, wow, wouldn't it be fun to build, and then other crazy shows, like, you know, I grew up watching, I mean, you want to get way back when I was really little, like really tiny, like the Ninja Turtles and
sure.
Ghostbusters, the real Ghostbusters, and, you know, all the classic, like, Deke.
Actual,
you know,
Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah,
stuff.
And so it was always like, God, and I always was an artist, like drawing and I'd create all these casts of characters, and so yeah, it was always more world building character stuff, and that was, and then it kind of, I never really, it's weird, I always, it was in the back there as like a driving force, but it wasn't super, almost subconscious, you know,
yeah.
Like I was like moving in that direction and working really hard in that direction without really consciously realizing, you know, I don't know, like, yeah, but the dream was to sell a show. That was, like, the dream. And when I was working in reality TV, it was, like, all reality TV ideas, because that was the world I
sure.
was in. So I'm like, okay, what's a good, weird reality TV idea that I can come up with? And came up with a lot of really interesting, clever ideas, but it was just, that's such a weird fucking scene, man, reality TV, but...
Is that your college years? Because when I was looking you up, there's kind of a gap
yeah.
in your Wikipedia between high school and then... You know, going to
yeah.
getting connected with Dan Harmon.
Oh,
so
sure.
So where you're like, it's, apparently you moved to Texas?
No, that's
no.
not true. No, never was in Texas. That's,
well, that's
weird.
We'll oh, go yeah. edit. Somebody go edit that.
Yeah, edit that out. No, I never lived in Texas. So I moved to LA. I dropped out of college or whatever. I didn't drop. I just was like, fuck this. And my friend Jamie was like, I called her and said, hey, we're thinking of coming to LA this weekend. Are you around? And she's like, if you come by yourself, I can get you a job as a PA for a day on this,
oh, wow,
on this show that I'm producing or working as a producer on. It was called Ultimate Revenge. Ryan Seacrest was the host. Woody Fraser Productions. It's like a hidden camera prank show where you'd set up your friend to get revenge on them for some fucking slight that,
right,
you know. And so I did it. So I was like, fucking, I'm in. So I went there. I worked that Saturday. And then by the end of the day, I wish I could remember her name, but the production manager basically said, do you want a full-time gig?
Wow, you must have had a good day.
Yeah, well, I was like, this is fucking...
You'd arrived, yeah.
Well, I was just like, what do you need?
The door is open, you're going, you're charging.
I was on, I was like, I was just like, what do I do? Like, I was so excited to be in that world, just anything even adjacent to the entertainment industry that I was just fucking on. And so by the end of the day, she's like, hey, like, we need to fill the slot, you know, for the rest of the season. Would you want it? I'm like, yes. Drove back the next day, or no, drove back at the end of shooting. So I'm like exhausted, but whatever, it was fine. And I luckily didn't crash. I don't fall asleep when I'm driving. I don't know. I just can't.
That's good. That's a good thing.
Couldn't fall asleep in school.
It's not recommended to fall asleep while you're driving.
But I can't. Like, I physically have never been able to. I couldn't fall asleep in school ever. Wanted to. Couldn't. But anyway, so yeah. And then I drove back Sunday and was there for Monday. And like, I moved to LA overnight, basically.
Wow.
Yeah. Was staying in a hotel for the first week, paying like $10 over my daily rate to stay at this, you know, I was like losing money for the first week just to like get my footing and figure out where the fuck am I going to live.
Yeah.
And, but then, yeah. And it just reality TV was my life. And so a lot of if you go to IMDb, a lot of my credits are like all these weird, obscure, you know, People's Champion and, First TV or something, like guys that did Battle Bots.
Oh yeah,
they had a show. They imported a UK show called Trigger Happy TV that I worked on. Just a bunch of random shit that no one. I worked on Crossballs. That's where I met like Rich Fulcher, Andy Daly, Matt Besser. Just all these. That was the first show where I was like, oh my god, I'm working in a comedy. I'm working in the scene that,
yeah,
I want to really, like, you know, be closer to. And anyway, I worked on Extreme Makeover Home Edition as an associate producer. That was fucking insane. I've got stories, but anyway, yeah, a lot of that stuff, like working. And then my nights and weekends were Channel 101, like making me and my buddy Savan and Abed making, you know, writing, recording, and animating these little shorts that we would do and learning, you know, the Dan Harmon kind of story circle, like really, that was my kind of college. You know, that was my real training of like,
right,
okay, how do I really craft a narrative that has curvature, that feels like a beginning, middle, and end, that, you know. And then House of Cosby's was where I really cracked the, you know, I was like, oh, okay. Like, it kind of was like, oh, I see this now, you know, like, but.
So
anyway,
the dream was to sell a show then.
Yeah,
when you
yeah.
sell Rick and Morty to Adult Swim,
yeah,
what's that? Walk me through that day.
Well, it wasn't. That's the thing. It wasn't. It's never just a day, man. It's like a period of. It's like a slog and hoops you got to jump through and all kinds of craziness. I mean, there's so many little mini stories to the, you know, the lead up from, you know, Dan and I talking, and he's like, you know, Adult Swim wants a show. I'd love to partner with you. Do you have any ideas? And I'm like, well, what about the
Doc and Marty?
Yeah, the Doc and Marty characters. And he's like, fuck yeah, I love it. That's the perfect energy to build a frame around. And so, you know, and then from that point to getting the green light to series, holy shit, was there like a journey there, you know?
Are your parents super supportive along the way, by the way?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
No, I mean, I'll be honest with you, like, I was floundering back home. I don't know what the fuck I was going to do. I just wasn't feeling like the bachelor degree or the associate's, you know, what. I just wasn't, like, I was dropping classes right before you. Do you know what I mean? It was like that day where it's like, if I don't drop this, it's going to hit my GPA.
Yep.
So like, I was just like, half my class is gone, but every single semester, like right before that point. But But then I'd keep the ones, like I kept Photoshop, I kept Premiere, Adobe Premiere, I kept the journalism class because I was doing comics and they're terrible. But, you know, it was just me like figuring out my voice and, you know, and stuff. But, getting back to like, what ends up happening is when you work hard and long enough, by the time you get the big win, the big like, holy shit, we have a show, it's not as explosive.
It's not like a movie.
No, it's not like winning the lottery, like popping champagne.
Right.
It's sort of like, it's like, okay, all right, we got to let, now it's, now the real
work
starts.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, by the time it actually happens, and this isn't the case for everybody. Some people will hit the lottery, quote unquote, metaphorically, like really young, and it is the like, holy fuck, and they go fucking crazy, and it's like, And I never got that. Mine was like this long burn. And by the time we got, and we had worked and done a bunch of, we had like acceptable TV that we did, you know, in 2006, 2007. You know, that was like, you know, Jack Black, and it was on fucking VH1. It's like the worst channel for a sketch show, like a comedy sketch show. But anyway, so we, you know, that didn't continue. That was like this real crazy slog. And, you know, again, nobody knows about that, but there's like crazy stories about how hard that show was to make because we were literally producing content in 4 days so that like the audience was voting on what would come back. And then we had 4 days to literally from soup to nuts.
Wow.
Have something. And I was running the animation department. Plus I was in a bunch of sketches. So I was getting pulled left and right. And I had an amazing core team in the animation department that were just crunching. I mean, we were living in that place. We were sleeping under our desks. We were there full time, 24/7, basically. Once the show got onto air, because they kept voting back the animated thing. So every week we had to deliver in 4 days.
Wow. New,
it was fucking bonkers. But
do you think that helped kind of ground you in a way that you didn't have like some overnight like
absolutely.
Firework?
Yeah. No, I think. Well, and also just my upbringing and stuff. I'm pretty humble, and I'm pretty. I mean, look, this sounds like, you know, I truthfully don't really crave the spotlight. I like to kind of hide behind the stuff I'm making. And yeah, I tend to be pretty down to earth, and just, I like to be around people that are, you know, smart and yeah, just normal, I guess,
yeah.
For lack of a better, you know, and I stay as far away from politics so I can hang out with a lot of different people, you know, which I think is great. And, but yeah. No, I attribute that more to my upbringing and stuff. But I will say, like, I'm very thankful I didn't achieve some kind of success early, because I was fucking, I was wild. I was out of my mind when I was in my, you know, 20s. I was crazy.
What does that mean?
Just like fucking nuts. I was like, you know, I had all this energy. I was just like, I don't know. Like
like you'd have spent a bunch of money on something stupid. And,
no, not even that. I would have been perceived as like, God, I don't even know how to, I don't know. It just would have been like.
It wouldn't have gone well.
Yeah. It would have been more, it was perfect the way it happened. It was, it needed to happen the way it happened. Yeah.
So when you get the 70 episode order for Rick and Morty, when that comes along, mm-hmm. are you able to enjoy that success? Because that, I mean, that's a big deal.
No.
Like, no?
I mean, not really. It was sort of like, oh, it was like, you know, a mixture of, okay, this is awesome and crazy, but almost outside of body kind of, you know, like not really, to this day, still haven't really like...
Yeah.
connected with the reality of it, even though we're, you know, headlong into season six airing and
yeah.
writing on, I mean, it's moving. So no, still haven't really connected with that, you know? It's crazy. It's
have you, have you celebrated that in any way, shape or form for yourself? Or are you just, is it just like right
no.
back to it?
I plan to, like, I'm building a studio. I'm doing things that I'm like, I think that's going to be the big, like, you know, this coming 2023, you know, is going to be like sort of, you know, we're shipping this game. Obviously, we have, you know, more work to do post ship, but like, you know, it's 2023 is going to be nice because there's a lot of stuff off my plate. I'm developing a lot of cool stuff. other people, like people I love, people who I think are brilliant. I'm helping them, you know, like I want to get some of these people, like, you should have a fucking show, like you need an animated show, like just people that I love and that I just want to watch what they make, you know, as a fan. So I'm like, if I can help people like that, I'm in a great position to be able to do that now. And so there's a lot of that. And then obviously the game stuff is just took me by surprise. Like, I didn't realize how much, you know, because again, we talked about Nintendo and Sega, but like I from Nintendo was like, I was glued. I mean, I had every console. At that point, once I started working and had my own money, like my priority was video games, like consoles and games. And that was like the number one. Handheld was massive for me, like huge, huge. And, but also console, all of it, you know? So I had everything. I mean, anything I can get my hands on. And I even took out like credit cards to get, you know what, like, you know, I worked at Best Buy and I got a Best Buy card to buy my GameCube and the games. I just reckless, but I was like, this is important for me. You know, it was huge. So I didn't realize how much, you know, game design and just, I don't even like just game mechanics and stuff that works and doesn't, and things I like and that I don't like that I had absorbed over the years. I just, it was dormant.
Yeah.
But I never, as a fan and gamer, I could comment and talk about things, but I wasn't ever using that in like the idea of making a video game was so far from reality for me.
Yeah.
And then the VR thing was just like, it just got me to a point of absolute, I just was like, I need to play. I want to build in this sandbox.
Yeah.
I need to. And so I was like, anything. Like, I'll do any. Like, it was insane how, you know, just, yeah, I would do anything. Like, anything to just make games and experiences in this crazy technology. And so that's how the studio started. But now we're like, you know, kind of finishing. Well, way back then, finishing Trover, it was this epiphany of like, holy fuck, I built the fucking game studio. I mean, Tanya helped me do it. We built a game studio. Like,
yeah,
we could just make a fucking game. We could just make a regular video game. I never even, like, that wasn't even ever in my mind. You know, the gateway drug, so to speak, was VR. And then here we are now with the game studio. And it was like, holy fuck, like, I've got this amazing team. They love, you know, working on this stuff. Like, let's just make a traditional, like, you know, shooter. Like, and I had the talking gun idea, and I was just like, these talking gun, every fucking like few months I was like, oh my god, when is the talking game gonna get announced, the talking gun game?
You were waiting for someone else. The other shoe to drop.
It's happened before where it's like, you know, yeah, it's happened before. So where it's like in the zeitgeist, it's like, you know, other people are thinking about it, and then somebody might have been thinking about it a while before, you know, it popped into my imagination. And so and I mean, the original design for Trover was, you know, because I was trying to go room scale, and you would have had a talking gun in that game, you know, originally.
Yeah.
And once we got the deal with Sony, it was like, I was very aware, like, okay, the Morpheus or the PlayStation VR was, in my opinion, best as a seated, like, VR, 180 VR experience. So I wanted the gamepad, and I was playing like really cool VR games the fuck was it? The Samsung Gear VR.
Oh yeah.
And there was a lot of good games that were like, well, not a lot. There was a handful of games that were third person, you know, that I was like, this is fucking amazing. But the one thing they weren't doing, they were just using the VR as like a glorified camera.
Yeah.
And exactly. I wanted to, for me, I was like, I want players to be there. I want players to be part of the story, and the characters are talking to you, but you're controlling a character in third person. So that became Trover. And, but then, yeah, later on, it was like, oh, fuck, we could just make, like, we can get back to the talking gun idea. And so, yeah, I was like, I remember talking to Robert Kirkman so long ago, and I was telling him about this, you know, we're in pre-pro, like, early days on High on Life, before we even knew it was going to be called High on Life, before the High on Life part even, you know, the all that stuff even was, like, part of it. And I was telling him about the talking gun game, and he's just like, fuck, like... he's like, God damn it. I was literally thinking about just like kind of building a new comic about talking. Like, I never got into like the details of it, but thinking about doing a new comic series with surrounding talking guns.
Yeah.
I don't think they would have been aliens. I think they, or maybe it would have just one talking gun. I don't even know. I should ask him more about it. But just I'll never forget his reaction. He was like, "God damn, fuck!" You know, like, how far in are you? How long? You know, I'm like, "Oh no, we're like, yeah, this has been, yeah." So it was like, and then that's what really got me scared, because I'm like, somebody's gonna, there's gonna be a trailer that hits at one of these E3s or one of these. And it's gonna,
so you're not even enjoying the E3, like,
no, I love E3. Oh, I love. No.
Well, you were still able to enjoy them without waiting for that.
Yeah.
That
it was more just like, oh, is it gonna happen? And honestly, even if it did, I always felt pretty confident that our version of it was would be so different than someone else's that we wouldn't have been like, all right, throw it in the, yeah, forget it. Let's, no, we would have kept going. But like, I just.
It would have been the Deep Impact Armageddon situation.
It wouldn't have been that, but it would have been like, shit, so people are going to compare us to that. And by the way, there are examples of it that exist, right? So there's the Borderlands gun, which is more of a joke. There's another one that, I can't remember. There's a few examples of this. So it's not like we're taking it to like full-blown companions. Like, yeah, these guys are like, you know, like a Dragon Age style, like, you know, they've got...
Right.
Backstory, they've got personality. If you have them out, they've got a lot to say. You know, and each, depending on what gun you're using, you're going to get completely different, you know, dialogue, information.
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of that while we've been playing it today.
Yeah. It's really cool.
Yeah, so I've got a couple more Rick and Morty things for you, but since we're on the subject, mm-hmm, of Squanch and High on Life, I'm curious... what have you learned about the business of making games?
Oh man, a lot.
That maybe like you wish you'd known going in, or because I think that's like me. I've been covering games for 20 years, but I've never made a game. I've never started a studio, and I think, you know, a lot of us that play and love video games, we might think about that side of it sometime. But I'm curious, as somebody who's, you've been on both sides,
dude,
of the fence now.
There's so much shit that I don't even know what I can say publicly, because developers, I'm glued to like stories. I watch a lot of YouTube. I watch a lot of like, you know, train wreck production, you know, like I mentioned Matt McMuscles before, like, yeah, his What Happened series. And there's a bunch of other really great people on YouTube making just really quality little well-researched kind of documentaries about, you know, all of the pitfalls and just insanity of game development. And, you know, there's just so much shit you learn. It's like, without getting into details, it's like, you know, we're in really good shape on our game, like, thank God. But, you know, you can see how, like, games get shipped before they're ready. Like, you can see, like, why it happens. There's so much politics. There's so much, like, there's relationships at stake. There's partnerships. There's marketing deals that are in place that you'll lose. It's just so much. I mean, again, I might be saying too much here, but like, there's a lot going on behind the scenes that
it's
developers. It's a fucking, yeah, and developers can't just publicly say, "Look, here's transparently what's going on, why this happened," you know. And so it's like this. Oh God! And as a gamer and as a fan of games and a consumer of like a one of my biggest, you know, pastimes, it's crazy to see. And to now be inside of it and to kind of know, because it makes me much more forgiving of, or at least to see the other side a lot, yeah, of times, where I'm just like, fuck, you know. And then I speculate, like, I bet you, like, okay, well, not to get into, but like CD Projekt Red with Cyberpunk 2077,
sure.
I don't know. Like, so yeah. I'm speculating, you know, and I'm thinking like, okay. And I'm just trying to think about what happened there. Like, what happened with this? And I'm sure we'll get a really great YouTube, like, well,
there'll be an oral history somewhere
maybe
down
Matt,
the line.
Maybe Matt, yeah, maybe Matt McMuscles will dive, or maybe he already has and I haven't seen it. But anyway, like, you know, I'd love a really well researched, you know, like, honest, like, here's what we know. But I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that they're a publicly traded, or they're like, you know, they have shareholders or whatever,
yeah,
just people that are like, and I don't know, I speculate, but it's like, it becomes. It's like, you know, obviously the golden rule is like a good game is always good. An early game is, or I don't know what is the famous saying? It's like,
a delayed game.
That's what it is. Yeah. A delayed game, no one remembers the delay. If it's good, can you remember when
Halo 2 got delayed?
Exactly.
No one cares.
Nobody fucking remembers that. They just remember the game's fucking awesome and that's the legacy of the game. But when you rush it and you ship it too early, it's permanent. It's like that first impression. It's just permanently.
Yeah, it takes years to turn around, like No Man's Sky. Like they got there, but it took a long time.
And God bless them, because that's a really good example with Hello Games of winning
the public over a second time.
Yes, which is very difficult to do. But they were like they knew what they were wanting to make. They had the ambitions, and I think it was a little Peter Molyneux-esque of like, you know, all these promises that were eventually going to, you know, happen. But I just think that they didn't realize maybe how long it was going to take to get there. You know, but whatever, over promising, that's a whole other thing. But I think, you know, the problem is it's like when you're dealing with like a big title that's got a lot of ambition, specifically with Cyberpunk 2077, it's like, you know, they just had a ticking clock and it was like, fuck. And I think it was a lot of politics, red tape and stuff that was forcing them to, they had to ship on this date for whatever reason. And yeah. I don't know yet. I will find out at some point, but I'm positive the people in that studio knew, like, they were just like, fuck, like, we needed to, you know, your instinct is let's delay the fucking game, but then there's 1,000 reasons why, you know, you can't. I'm probably saying way too much.
You did delay your game.
We did.
A couple months. You're staying in 2022. Which,
and that wasn't us. That was, well, again, I don't, never mind.
No, but, no. Actually, yeah. So I wanted to stay on this because, again, being someone who has been on both sides of the fence I'm curious what you can educate us on with regard to
the delay.
Not even the delay, actually, just kind of tangential to that, of, you know, exclusives are such a big thing in the games business.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
You're an Xbox exclusive, you're a Sony.
Sure.
In this case, you guys signed up with Microsoft for this game pass. I'm curious, like, how does that, like, literally how does that come about? Like, are you out pitching High on Life to publishers and Microsoft likes it and says hey we'll make you some financial guarantee if you get it on Game Pass and make it exclusive to our console? I'm just curious that of what you can say without breaching any contracts.
God, this is so funny.
How does that exclusivity deal come about? You're an indie studio. You could have put it on every platform. You could have put it on PC only. You could have signed with Sony.
The answer is simple. It's so funny because this is like where I miss Tanya. You know, like she'd been a producer at Epic for a long time. We're still buddies, but like she would always be at these and just be like, you know, like she was really good about that. But now I'm just like, okay, well, you know, I have all these answers. I think the big answer is just being an indie studio, you know, and making such an ambitious game early on. You know, we don't have a big Trover wasn't like a huge revenue stream hit for us. It certainly did well enough. I think it's one of the better titles on the Quest, and I love the Quest. You know, I'm in VR constantly.
Yeah.
But obviously, I made the game. I'm biased, right? Like, I wanted a game. I make games I want to play. I make games that don't exist that I want to experience. And of course, by the time I'm done working on them, I'm like, I can't. I'm done.
Most developers like that.
Yeah, I've played it enough. I'm good. I got to wait a long time and then go back to it later, and I'm like, whoa, or I'm like, oh, I don't know. But maybe a mixture. But in any case, it's a money thing. We were so deep into production that it was pretty easy for us to slap together a really good like vertical slice. And our philosophy is, you know, we're sort of like, we'll go to publishers, you know, as a last ditch, you know, if we had to. But I think the smarter move for us is to just talk directly to the platform holders. So talk to Microsoft, talk to Sony. We've got good relationships with both, and that was our plan.
Right. You did Trover for Sony.
Yeah, and it was, I mean, obviously, you know, there's been a lot of like change, like a lot of people left that we were really like, you know, close with, but we still have good really good connections and relationships with the people that are there currently. We have obviously a great relationship with the folks at Microsoft, and so we just like let them play the demo, you know. And we went to other people outside of those two just cuz, you know, you cast a wide net. And We were like, if we don't, it's either A, we raise more, you know, capital for the studio, like with some sort of like series, you know, some sort of Silicon Valley style, you know, fund, you know, what's it called, VC style raise, money raise, or we get a deal with one of these platform holders, or we go to a publisher. If your game, if you bring it and the game is really of good quality and interesting or doing something new or doing something unique or whatever, we're trying to do something more like classic, you know, single player Metroidvania first person shooter action adventure, like with upgrades and obviously with this massive umbrella of like crazy comedy narrative,
yeah,
to the point of just as ambitious as you can get that in that department with the cast and everything else. But you know, so Game Pass was just like, it made sense. It was like, yeah, this is really smart for us, I think.
So my understanding is that there are different models for sort of different deals to be made with, mm-hmm, when it comes to Game Pass.
And I'll be truthful, that's where my lane at the studio is creative.
Yeah.
And you know, big picture and then sometimes, you know, getting into the minutiae of like certain like feel and or jokes or timing, but when it, and then obviously early days, big picture, global, like what's the big narrative, what's the world, what's the characters. But when it comes to that, I have no fucking idea. That's my CCO,
yeah,
Fridley. He would know all that shit. But yeah, I have no clue what our
so it's you know what,
where
but
we
you're
are
already and, being knee deep into production. I imagine it's you're getting some kind of backstop against that investment, and then
yeah,
your game's on Game Pass where yeah, you've got a pretty
Steam,
good chance.
It's going to be on Steam. Yeah. It's going to work on the Steam Deck. I've been playing it on the Steam Deck, just the dev, you know.
Yeah.
Sorry, our dev build, and it's like, it plays great.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
Fucking awesome.
What'd you learn?
I'm like burping, like...
Well, you know what? Hey,
Don't normally do that. I'll tell you why.
I have a burp take Rick and Morty
little,
question. Yeah, that's fine.
You got a little happy juice over
Well, here. Get some of that in your system. I'm curious. I guess we're going to come back to the burping.
Okay.
Hold the thought on that.
Oh, Jesus.
But since we're talking high on life,
yeah.
what'd you learn from Trover, good and bad, that's lessons of making that game that are applied to high on life?
Oh God, there's probably a lot of stuff that I'm just trying
like
to think.
Level, you know, the biggest one
well,
or two.
Okay, so I'll be honest. So the first thing I ever did was accounting, and that was with William. Crows guys, Stanley Parable, and they just released Stanley Parable Deluxe, which I highly recommend. If you haven't played it, get it. It's like a whole new game basically. But they should have just called it Stanley Parable 2. I don't know, but whatever. I don't know. But anyway. Amazing. And so we got together and we did a VR experience, and it was just a game jam thing, but it was so simple in terms of like thinking about, you know, trigger volumes, or just when a player picks up a thing, this audio plays. When they set it down, it goes back to the bass audio. When they pick up this thing, this audio plays. It's very like baby's first, you know, if you were to talk about this in traditional, you know, gaming, it's like, well, yeah, fucking, that's how they've been doing it since the beginning. But for some reason in VR, it was just so crazy. Like, it was so weird, that little tree guy yelling at you, you know, get the fuck out of here, whatever. I was doing his voice. I was like, fuck you, you know. I was trying to tap into, who's the actress with who cares? Anyway, but anyway, so yeah, I was like, just fuck you, get out of my tree place, you know, and then you pick up a thing, hey, don't pick that up, don't, you know, and it's very like, he's so aware of you, and yeah, you're in the environment, like actually there, that it just hit the brain in a different way. And but that was a great one, because I was sitting there typing, you know, I was like, okay, this trigger is going to be all of this dialogue, this trigger is all of this dialogue, and then I'm writing Dom and William's stuff as the guys on the phone, and then we would go in and record, and then they would just take the script and go off, you know, they would make it their own, and then everyone we got would kind of,
yeah,
go in and
70% improv you talked about.
Yeah. And that one was like, you know, a 50-50 kind of thing, but it was, and it turned out so good. And so we released that for free, and then of course later I flew to Germany and we did all the extra stuff for Accounting Plus, and then we sold that one for a very fair, I think, price for what it is. But and there's all kinds of Easter eggs and cool shit if you want to keep, like, you know, trying to figure out how to find stuff. But that was the real one where I'm like, okay, like, I see how this works. Like, almost like it's not that crazy, for at least what my job can be. Like, I can, you know, and so going into Trover, we really blew that out with, like, trigger volumes and, like, you know, things that we know the player did, eliciting a line of dialogue,
right,
that really makes the world feel alive. And it's like, you know, and then going into High on Life, that's, we really kicked that shit up. Like, you know, so, it, you know, Trover was, it's a weird first person, third person VR hybrid. So you're there, you're controlling Trover. You can pop up and down to get a better vantage point. You can, it's really fun. It's a great action platformer. If nobody's played it, I promise you won't be disappointed. Although there is a lot of swearing, so maybe not for the kids. I don't know. But it's really, if you like Moss, if you like any of those, we did a whole ad campaign joking about Moss. I don't know if you ever saw that.
I reviewed that game. It's one of my favorite VR games.
It's a great VR game. I feel like it kind of got overlooked. But if you haven't played it, it's a great one. But and obviously I'm biased. But I will say that, like, you know, in that game you have Trover. That's it, right? You and Trover. So, we you know, obviously Trover has a lot to say, and it's very interactive, and he's talking about, you know, you're moving him around. So when you do a thing, he's going to comment, and it's,
yeah,
really cool. And it just feels cool when you're doing that in VR. So then we were like, well, okay, now we're talking about a game with four characters. You know, these are four fully fleshed out characters. They are each a complete Trover in a sense. So it's like writing four video games, you know.
Yep.
And players are really only going to hear the dialogue of whatever gun they're using in any given situation. So it's like, it's highly replayable if you want to, like, experience, and depending on choices you make, it completely obfuscates, like, it eliminates, like, certain things you know. There's just a lot in this game that one of our things that we were excited about is, like, not that we're pushing, like, a replay, like, we want this to be heavily replayable. It just turned out that way, where it's like, if you really want to see all kinds of stuff, you're going to want to go in and try,
yeah,
different guns in different scenarios. You're going to want to, like, rescue guns in different,
yeah,
orders.
You're not doing the Dying Light 2 thing of, our game's 400 hours long.
No, not at all.
Everybody's
not
like,
all.
Whoa,
no,
hold
this
on.
This is more of like a BioShock or like some of my favorite games, you know, in this genre are the kind that have that Metroidvania exploration upgrade tree with, like, really cool,
yeah,
new abilities that really affect traversal, that affect combat, new enemies that change how combat scenarios work. And then obviously the guns in and of themselves are upgradable and also have special abilities that do all kinds of cool shit. And the order that you rescue them, it changes. So you can go back and replay the game and rescue another gun first instead of and then go play a mission with that gun now and,
yeah,
hear all of that gun's dialogue. So there really is, like, a high And then also not to mention just all the other crazy, like, weird shit that we put in. There's a lot to see in this game. But and that was not, that wasn't like a, you know, they talk about pillars, you know, in game development. It's like, okay, what are our main three pillars, you know? We knew, like, first-class shooter, like, really, with, like, really cool traversal upgrade mechanics. We wanted, obviously, comedy and story, like, really, like, great actors, great fun NPC experiences, just surprises. I can't remember the third one. I'm sure, whatever. Metroidvania, like, really good boss fights.
Two pillars, then.
Yeah, two pillars. Okay. I know there was three. But, like, but then what we kind of discovered the deeper we got in is, like, oh, hey, like, we kind of accidentally, like, have this really highly replayable game, because if someone's a real big fan of it, like, and they want more, it's there. You know exactly, like, okay, well, I'm going to go and do it this way now, you know, yeah, instead of that way. And it's not just, like, one big this way or that way. It's, like, there's big ones, and then there's just a ton of, like, little ones. So, and it's not to the point of, like, Until Dawn or, like, Quarry, where I'm pretty sure those guys, that's their main, that's, like, the pillars.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we want 1,000.
Yeah, 8 endings or
permutation.
Whatever.
Permutation. Yeah. We're not, like, going that crazy, but there is a lot of fun stuff. And we really are good about palate cleansing, making sure that, you know, players are getting, like, a lot of fun shooting and action. And then we get some fun comedy bits and some downbeats. And then we're back into, you know, and also a lot of opt-in. Like, I really am a big firm believer of, like, let the player, as much as we possibly can, let the player decide, you know, when they want to hang out with an NPC and just listen to crazy shit. If they want to bone out and keep playing the game, let them do it. Like, don't lock anyone down. I mean, in this game, in Trover, never. No one was ever locked down, ever. In this game, we kind of had to in certain spots because there's just such a bigger story that, you know, there's, you know, so early game, there's more of that. But then as you get deeper in, it just kind of opens up. And we really, every time we had a moment, we always were like, okay, can we unlock the player? Can we let the player just bounce and keep playing the game or just do whatever they want to do? Because to me, that's the, if we can do that, then let's do it and let's figure out how to do it. And so we, that's, that was our, this game, there's so much shit to hear, even just with an enemy encounter. If you just sort of sit back and hang out and listen to the enemies, they're going to talk for so fucking long and you'll hear the funniest shit if you want to.
Yeah.
But if you want to just keep going and start the combat encounter, by all means, you won't even notice. You won't even know what you missed. You know what I mean? So it's really, like, there's a lot of stuff. It's really cool.
Any direct game inspirations for this? Because I'll tell you, finally sitting down to play it myself today, I there's a little Oddworld vibe to
it.
Oh,
for sure. Lauren Lanning stuff. Like, you know, it's funny. I don't... It was never intentional. It was never like a... it was more subconscious, you know, because I played all this stuff. I truthfully had never played Stranger's Wrath until much recent,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, God damn, like, this is fucking amazing. It's incredible. If you haven't played it, like, God damn, like, it's on the Switch.
Yep.
It's really good. Funny, you know, it's so close to what we're doing for sure. You know, building a whole alien world, like, you know, here's a big lesson that I learned tertiarily, or just, you know, from the outside looking in, with Jim Henson. So Jim Henson did Dark Crystal, right?
Yeah.
It bombed. And I remember him watching an interview or reading something about him talking about how he believes the problem was there wasn't that human element, that sort of grounded, you know, a human being to kind of, like, you know, it was almost too alien, too, you know, the Gelflings weren't enough for you to, like, transpose, you know, or, like, look at them and they're the protagonists I relate to. They were too weird and uncanny valley. And, like, at least that's what he felt was one of the problems with it. I obviously absolutely adore that movie. And then you go into, so then he made the change with Labyrinth, where he's like, okay, I'm going to cast Connolly. I'm gonna have Bowie, obviously. Yeah. What a fucking get, you know, to get fucking David Bowie. But anyway, so they, you know, we'll have human characters at the core of the narrative, and then we'll have all the craziness around them. And that was kind of the approach I wanted to go with in this game, was like, I want a grounded human, you know, story here, and then we go off into Alice in Wonderland, you know, or, you know, Narnia or whatever. That's, like, my favorite, yeah, kind of way to do it. And so, you know, getting back to like Stranger's Wrath, it was, I don't know, honestly, I feel that game got robbed. I don't know why it didn't do as well as it did initially, because it really is a great game. But part of me can't help but wonder, like, maybe if there was some kind of, you know, grounded, you know, human way into it, obviously that would completely wreck and change. It would be a page one rewrite for the game. I don't know how you'd do it, but anyway, the game's amazing. And that's a great example of like, you know, living ammo and like all the kind of weird kind of stuff we're doing here. And we had a lot of stuff we had to cut that really was like very, even more similar with like ammo and ideas like that. And obviously, like, I did play the fuck out of Oddworld, you know, the originals, and Munch's Odyssey. I played on the Xbox, and, you know, I don't think I finished it, but I played quite a bit of it. And then Strangers, yeah, I was one of those idiots that didn't get it when it first came out, you know. And now I you play it now, and it's like it holds up really well.
Sometimes it's timing. Sometimes it's marketing. It can be anything.
It's a perfect storm of a lot of things, and I don't even understand it.
That's one reason I was actually, because I'll be honest, I said this live on the air, so I'm not like just sitting here kissing your ass, but I. High on Life was one of my standout games from the Xbox showcase. It just seemed fresh. It seemed new.
Thank you. Yeah.
And honestly, like, I'm kind of happy that it's coming out in December, because then it's not near Call of Duty.
Yeah,
you know, these games with 100 times your marketing budget or you know, I mean, God of War is going to be out there.
But very different, too.
But they're still competing for time.
A lot of people only have
enough money for one or two games in the fall, and, you know, obviously you're doing Game Pass, which is great, but you're still, there's only 24 hours in a day.
Well, we knew going in, like, this is a really awesome, you know, well-crafted single-player action-adventure. There's Metroid, you know, inspiration, you know, the whole lock and key, the upgrade tree with, like, new awesome mechanics that you get all the way throughout the game that really change how you traverse and get around the world, and also the new guns really open up, like, all kinds of stuff. So, you know, even like Prime and then I mentioned BioShock before, but like, you know, really good first in class kind of shooter mechanics, really polished, really cool traversal and fight, like the dash and the dodge and these upgrades you get along the way, you know, that kind of stuff. But ultimately, like, making a game that's like, hey, so this is a really good, like, just solid, you know, 15-hour, like, you know, awesome game that you can obviously spend way more time if you want to go back in, or if you want to sit and hang out and listen, or literally watch the fucking four movies that are in there. There's full-length four movies in this fucking game. One of them has commentary throughout the whole movie, too, by the way.
There's that MST3K influence.
Literally, yeah. It's very much that. 100%. It's very much that. But you know, there's a lot in this game, but the core A path is, you know, around 12, 15 hours. And that was by design, because it was like, you know, there's not a lot of, like, right now there's a lot of, like, you know, hey, this is a game you can play forever, or hey, this is a, you know, microtrans free-to-play. You know, there's a lot of, like, the gaming industry has sort of gone in a lot of different interesting directions. But me, my favorite shit is, like, give me a Shadow of Colossus. Give me a...
Yeah, I don't need a game that's a job that I have to play for, you know, 80 hours.
I love Minecraft. I have a weird, like, on and off addictive, I'll fall into a Minecraft hole for like 4 months or a few months, and I'm just like, suddenly, okay, I'm out of it. But then it happens again. It's happened over and over and over. I have a server, by the way. If anyone wants to play on my Minecraft server, it's chuntis.com. So please, you know, go populate Chuntis. It's a vanilla anarchy server. Chuntis, chuntus.com. Please go check it out and enjoy. I might dive back in if I see it's like popping off. But
you gotta humor me. Let me come back to Rick and Morty for a couple minutes before I let you go. I've been keeping you here for a while.
No, it's fine. I'm almost out of water. Look at that.
Look at this.
I'm gonna make it last. I'm gonna really like.
Well, you've got your secret stash over there still. Yeah.
This helps. This stuff.
Yeah,
helps.
You're in good shape.
Yeah. I guess, just
out of curiosity, like, where did Rick and Morty's voices come from? I'm always curious to ask that of voice actors. That, you know, like, where is it? Do you see the character in your head first, or do you hear the character in your head first?
The truth is, it was a sloppy, shitty impression of Doc and Marty, or, you know, from Back to the Future. And what happened was, I don't remember when or where, but it was a bunch of Channel 101 people. We're all at a bar, and we were out front of the bar. It's such a hazy memory, but I remember, like, there was this bit we used to do. Like, Ridley would be, like, Harmon, Ridley, Drew Hancock, Wade Randolph, I remember, was there. Just a bunch of these, like, you know, just Channel 101, like, early days, like people. And there was a bit where it was, like, this fake, like, fight. Whoa, 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 whoa. Everyone's breaking each other up, you know. But the joke was there's not really a fight happening. Yeah. But it's just, like, everyone's trying to break up a fight all at once. And it was fucking hilarious. And then somewhere within that, somebody did a Doc and Marty impression. Not me. Somebody else did it, started doing it. I wish I could remember who it was. And I was like, then I started doing mine. And then it was sort of like, I don't even know if anyone heard me do mine. It was sort of, and then it went back to the whoa, whoa, whoa thing. And we're all drunk and I don't remember. But but I remember, like, when I was doing mine, I was like, ooh, I like that, like, a lot. And so it stuck with me. And then I went back and I was like, okay, my next Channel 101 short is going to be this, like, really filthy. Because I had just come off of this other job that was like a Spike TV video game, you know, kind of comedy sketch show, but video game centric. And I think it was Bert Kirshner was the host, maybe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah, he's great. But I never really got to hang out with him or meet him. I was like, I was the animation producer and Savan and, like, Stephen Chun, like my core animation team from Channel 101 days. I just hired all those guys. I was like, let's just make the cartoons for this. We can just do it ourselves. And but we also farm things out to certain other, like, animation studios. But anyway, so after that job, it was just like, dude, the notes we got and, like, how just restrictive it was, and we couldn't really just make good shit. It was brutal. It was like, we can't get one past the fucking goalie here. Like, just let us make a fucking good thing. Don't, like, trust. Like, you know, what's the worst that'll happen? You know, they were very metal at Spike TV, very meddlesome. It was fucking bonkers. But anyway, so I come out of that, and I just was like, I had all this pent up, like, and also I was thinking, I just want to make something that's going to make an audience of 400 people scream and cover their eyes. And I wanted to feel that energy. I wanted to be anonymous in that theater room and hear this. Because I'd done it once before with a thing called Unbelievable Tales, where it's just fucking awful, fucked up, just dark, horrible, you know, the worst kind of dark humor, you know, which was more acceptable back then than it is now. People would watch that now and go, oh, God, oh. But it's like, look, I made it because that was the point. Yeah. You know, I wanted to sit in the audience and troll. Like, I just wanted to see an audience, like, I wanted to hear the crowd, like, shriek and, like, oh, fuck, oh, God. And so I did that with this Doc and Marty short, and it was so fun, man. And then coming out of it, I was like, I really like these voices. I like, there's something more to these voices that I can make them my own and do something different. And then I sold a lot of shows, you know, in between then and Rick and Morty. And I was always putting those voices and those different incarnations of those characters into the shows and sort of figuring out, like, okay, you know, and they'd be very different each time, you know, like, personality, you know, but it was those voices still. And, like, one of them was called Relative Insanity, and there was, like, a grounded, normal, sane guy with an insane family, and the triplets were the Morty voice, but all three of them sounded... but they had a little more of, like, a British hint
affect,
to it. Yeah. But just more breathy, you know, than Morty, but no one would know the difference. Like, you do Morty, and it's like... I could do all the different versions, and that's just Morty. Like, you know, and I'm like, that's fine. I'm the first one to admit I've got, like, you know, I'm the master, not even the master. I'm the voice actor with maybe three voices, you know. I'm working on some other, I'm workshopping some others, because it's like, it's getting time where it's like, all right, enough. We've heard the Morty voice. We can do something else. But anyway.
All right, I got to let you go in like 5 minutes here. I'm being told by my crew that kept you for too long.
That's fine.
Can you just tell me real quick about the burp takes? Those, like, can you make yourself burp, or do you, like, do you go in with a soda beforehand or a beer beforehand?
Yeah, so it's changed a lot. So in the early days, it was like a really low calorie, like light beer, kind of worked really well.
Yeah.
Like a 64 calorie.
Yeah.
You know, you'd have to drink 50 of them to get a buzz, you know, kind of thing. That worked really well. And then it went to SodaStream. So Sydney, our producer on the show back then, would bring in SodaStream, and that, I was like, this is chef kiss good. Like, it would work. But now it's just LaCroix works. But the problem is I can't just do it. I have to like drink, and then like I'll tell Ricky, my engineer, like, okay, let it roll. Just let it roll.
It's got to bubble up.
It'll come when it comes, and I'll feel it. But like, let's just keep going. Let's continue. And then when it happens, I'll jump back. But just leave it open. And so he, you know, and we just, it's, I'm so jealous of Sarah Chalk, because she can just burp, like she can just do it like instant, like so effortlessly. And I'm like, you know, and by the way, like in the early days, that was kind of part of the sloppy, like absurd nature of Rick, is the burping in the middle. It's just like, you know, and then the deeper we got into the show, and also combined with the fact that it wasn't just, you know, easy for me to like do, it was like, well, let's dial it back. I mean, Harmon, like in the pilot, I think he burped every fucking line. And it was like, we gotta pull this back. Like Harmon was like, we gotta pull this back. And I was.
It cracks me up every time, though.
I wasn't tell you arguing that. I was like, yeah, you know. And also, oh man, I remember like that pilot record, like because every line.
It's a lot of beer.
I had to get a burp. I had a clean and a burp take, but you know, was I drinking beer for that? I might have been, but like, yeah, I was sick, man. I had an awful stomach ache from just. You know, yeah, it was fucking bad. I was like, luckily never had that again. But
well, let's wrap on High on Life, because that's what you're here to promote.
Yeah, High
on Life. That's the
let's
game. It's out in December on PC, Xbox, and Game Pass. Yeah. Any ideas kicking around for Squanch's next game yet?
We have a lot of really fun smaller swings. We've got the bigger stuff we want to do. I think, you know, look, without getting too into it, you know, the studio is just getting started. It's a passion project for me. I'm so grateful and blessed. Not that I'm religious. I don't know what the fuck happens when we die, but something spiritual, right? But I'm very, very, very grateful for all these amazing people that are a part of the team that believe in the vision of the studio and all the cool shit we want to do. And we've got a lot of stuff we want to do. And there's a lot of cool unannounced stuff that you know, we're excited to share with the world when the time is right. And but you know, this is our first big swing in the traditional game space, I guess, is if you know, as opposed to VR game. And you know, we really hope it does well, because that gives us the money that we need to. It's not cheap, man, making games. It's like you got a bit. We have a decent sized studio, and like the burn is like it's like the monthly burn just for our team. And that's games, man. And also animation. It's all the blood, sweat, and tears of talented people, you know, and that's it. That's where the money goes, is to those people. And you want to be good to them. You want to make sure that they're getting paid well, and you know, and they're being treated well. So, you know, and just very grateful to have it. And yeah, we have a lot of fun shit coming. But
in the meantime, High on Life.
Yeah,
Justin, thank you so much for sitting down.
You.
High on Life, out this December on PC, Xbox, and Game Pass. Check it out. And for more
and Epic
on
Game
High
Store.
On Life,
hey, what do you
yes,
know? Also,
all
Epic
the PC
Store,
platforms.
Not, yeah.
We're covering High on Life all month long right here on IGN.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.